Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, today with my fabulous co-host.
Hey, guys. This is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
So today, I think Chris is in Virginia. Is that right?
I made it back to Virginia. The world tour of Chris Nicole is back in Virginia.
Tell us how your last 7 days have been.
They've been great. We spent some time in Florida after the Olympia celebrating my birthday. So we hit some theme parks. That was really nice to have a little bit of relaxing time since it's been a crazy competition season. And then we drove all the way up to Pennsylvania to visit my parents to celebrate some family birthdays. And then just this morning, we made it back to Virginia. So a lot of moving around. There will be more moving to come, but we're just taking it day by day, and it's just an adventurous life. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, we've got quite the, just as always, we've got a lot of things heading up in the pipe. Team show here in about 2.5 weeks in Des Moines. Mm-hmm. And you've got competitors with the Ben Weider. So that should be an exciting, for those listeners that don't know about this competition, it's the very first drug tested pro qualifier, which is such exciting news for the MPC. And it previously was in Canada, and now it's been moved to Alexandria, Virginia. So right in your backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I just love the fact that, natural athletes can have that, option to compete, to earn their pro status with a drug test. I know myself personally, I've done, the Ohio Natural, the Indiana Natural, and I just feel like the way that this sport keeps evolving, I know you used to compete like in the OCB, it's not something that's necessary. You earned your pro card just fine, without a drug test. But it's kind of nice as the sport keeps changing, to kind of have that in there, for those people.
Yeah. I talked to Gary Yuta at a show a couple years ago, and he was talking about how he wants to bring some more natural shows, to the MPC and the IFBB. And he's also like a big proponent of like masters shows. Mm-hmm. So he kind of like has those little niches within like the big organization, and he's a mid-Atlantic region and runs amazing, competitions and show days. So, I'm sure there will be new and more exciting things to come.
Yeah. I'm excited. I've heard whispers of a masters, championship because with masters, it's really hard to just, don't get me wrong. There are people that were up on the Olympia stage that were definitely masters competitors, but mm-hmm. I do think it'd be nice if there was like an Olympia type, event where masters competitors, when they compete as a pro, in the masters division, they actually don't get any points. They have to, qualify in the open. So I think it'd be kind of cool to have like a world championship for masters competitors in the professional league.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure there will be more opportunities coming, so stay tuned.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so getting to today's topic, I was so excited to see that there was some research done this year in February over we've been talking about, in a past podcast, we talked about the Matador study and how eye-opening that was with diet breaks. And there's a lot of buzz around refeeds and diet breaks and whether or not it's appropriate for physique athletes, and how that can help us get to our goals versus like a continuous diet. And Dr. Bill Campbell has been just really pivotal in presenting research out of his lab. And so there's some new data that we'll get to that at the very end, so I won't spoiler alert. But we're going to talk about the three different ways of dieting. And the first one is the continuous diet. And that's just a baseline calorie that you, 7 days a week, you're in a certain amount of a deficit, whether that's like a 25% deficit. Let's say, you're on a 2,000 calorie diet, that puts you into a deficit. I am jealous, by the way, if you're that person, but because that is not a deficit for me. But if you are, you're basically eating the same calories every day. So that's diet one. Diet two is like the refeed method. So let's say, for example, that 2,000 calorie individual, they were on during the week, Monday through Friday, 1,800 calories. And then on the weekends, they were to increase their calories by 2,500. So again, still same kind of deficit, just different undulating amounts of calories depending on what day of the week it is. And then the third option is the diet break option. And let's say that that person, that 2,000 calorie individual, they're in a 25% deficit at 2,000 calories. They follow that for 4 weeks. And then at weeks 5 and 6, they are at maintenance calories. So like that 2,500 versus doing like 48 hours of refeeding, they're basically just staying at their maintenance calories at 2,500. Now, we talked about diet breaks, and the reason why we brought it up primarily is because we were getting a lot of questions when that Matador study came about. It sounded so glamorous to go on a diet break. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm taking a break from dieting. That doesn't mean that you're just like eating whatever you want, doing like a 10,000 calorie challenge daily. It's very calculated, and a maintenance calories just means that you're not going to gain and you're not going to lose, but it still feels like you're dieting. I know I've been on maintenance calories, currently kind of am right now. And it definitely still feels like I'm dieting because you still have to track and you can't just eat freely. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the name can be deceiving. And like those headlines for all those articles, people are always like clicking on them for diet breaks.
Yes.
yes. Yes. But I do think like, when you're a competitor, there's calculations for pretty much everything most of the time. So like, there's always, like a strategy behind it, and just going like ham, for 2 weeks of just eating whatever you want, I don't think is necessarily as strategic as when you're, you know, maintenance calories are totally different than just eating in a crazy surplus.
Yeah. And I'm glad that this study did come about, that Matador study, because I feel like, you know, when I first started about 10 years ago, I actually got a prescribed cheat meal, and we called it a cheat meal. So to me, that was like, okay, the chains were on, you know, all week. And then on Saturday, I just like ate as much as I possibly could. Like, it was a disgusting like binge basically. And what I found personally is that when I would do that, I would actually either gain weight or I wouldn't lose. So for me, it was not a strategic way for fat loss because I ended up consuming so many calories in that one meal or during that day, if it turned into a cheat day, because I kind of was like the effort mentality.
That's how it goes. Yep.
Yeah, so it pulled me out of a deficit and sometimes even put me into a surplus. So I think a lot of like the coaches now that know what they're doing, you know, especially if the client is in a weight loss phase where they're leaning out, they're not going to do an untracked meal or a quote unquote cheat meal. I like the term untracked better. Yes. I do implement that in the improvement season.
Yes.
For most people that have a handle, once their hormones have leveled out, like their hunger levels are at a normal spot, and their sensor receptors of whether or not they're actually truly hungry are there, then I will give those untracked meals so that they can still have that, you know, just like I'm going to go out on a date, you know, right, with my significant other and not have to like bring my scale or whatever. So
yes,
what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the untracked is for a specific group at a specific time. It's benefited me as well when I just don't want to have to calculate the last meal of the day and I just want to be able to order. But it is for people that are able to exhibit control, because I know there's been other times where if I was given an untracked meal, I would just make that meal as large as possible with as many courses as possible, and it wouldn't be benefiting me towards my goal. So like I said, time and place for everything. Amy, I think you do a really good job of like being able to identify when people are ready for those different types of changes within their diet.
Thanks. I think you are too. Yeah, and I definitely don't. I don't give those to people that are usually, unless they're a macronator and they already have basically reversed into the show, where their mm-hmm. calories are already at like 2,000. I typically mm-hmm. don't give those until they're, you know, 6 to 8 weeks post show, so that their leptin is like in a good spot.
Yes. Yeah. And there are some people too that I notice they don't like the untracked meal. Mm-hmm. Like they prefer to have it's almost like control. They feel like they want to have a little bit of control and given specific instructions, because they're very like type A. They like mm-hmm. lists. They like to know that they're doing everything correctly. Mm-hmm. And so I've had people with untracked meals that have actually been more stressed out by having too much of that freedom. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like individual based, like you said.
Yeah. So, I mean, what it comes down to is that net calorie balance, right? So if you're able to maintain a caloric deficit over time, then you're going to lose weight. It's just for bodybuilders specifically, we need to take a really close look at this. And that's why I'm so glad that there's research and scientific evidence-based, you know, something to stand on when it comes to actually preserving muscle in that fat loss phase, and then, you know, losing the maximum amount of body fat, but maintaining the muscle and or growing muscle during a deficit. So that's where, you know, a study that came out, it kind of showed a fast diet. So like a 12-week cut, that was like always the typical old school approach, right? When we would get ready for a competition, like back in the day, the OGs, like 12-week cut. So basically it was like a crash diet. And now I think a lot of coaches, they've gotten smart about it, and they realize that a slower, steady approach to fat loss will preserve the most muscle. And so more people, and we don't even have a 12-week option on our website. Right. And this is exactly why, you know, we have a 24-week option. And I think a lot of coaches are gravitating towards that. It's also why we have a year package of 48-week because the reverse after the show is so important. So our minimum is 16 weeks, and anything less than that. So if an athlete is, you know, in a good spot and they like, you know, are saying, you know, hey, can I do a show in 10 weeks? And they're in a good spot. They just have to know that what we're going to do to move them forward, there's probably not going to be refeeds. You know, mm-hmm. there's probably not going to be diet breaks for sure, because it's just a tight timeline, to get to stage lean, which is very different than others. Yeah. So yeah, that's my two cents. Any thoughts to add?
Yeah. I think you definitely described that perfectly. I know for me, that's what when I started my introduction into the bodybuilding world, that's what I was told. Like, you pick a show in 12 weeks and that's what you do. You just diet like crazy. You do lots of cardio. And luckily I've had much better experiences with utilizing, refeed meals, diet breaks. I think that really helps the longevity of athletes as well too, not just their body, but their mentality. So
For sure. Yes. And we'll get into the mental side of that for sure, because that definitely, when it comes to adherence, your psychological stance on dieting and things like that can really play a huge role in consistency. And that's really the biggest thing. So let's kind of touch on the 24 or the 48-hour refeed. So, for example, let's say that I kind of want to use you as an example if you're good with that.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. So we did a similar type of diet with Chris here when she was in her improvement season. We kind of kept her at a lower baseline caloric intake during the week. So Monday through Friday, just because she's busy with work, she, I think you were able to just kind of stay lower calorie and you preferred that. Then to have like a calorie spike on the weekend, so that you can have a little bit more flexibility. And I remember giving you the option. I remember saying, you know, we can either do a continuous diet where you're just, you have higher calories every day of the week on average. So we're kind of still in that same, whatever the goal is, like if it's a deficit, maintenance, or surplus, like you want to average out what how many calories you're getting over 7 days. So what we would do is basically just give you lower calories Monday through Friday. And then initially, I think I gave you like a high calorie spike of like, I don't know, like 500 or 800 calories, like depending on where you were at in your reverse.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were like, can I just split these up? Because I kind of want to like put them over 48 hours. Well, little did we know, actually, Bill Campbell's lab came up with a pretty good study on this, but we'll get into that in a second. Basically, we did a 48-hour refeed for you. So we did two like 400-calorie spikes on Saturday and Sunday. So, yeah, the March paper in 2020 out of Dr. Bill Campbell's lab, they had two groups of males and females, and for 7 weeks, group one did the continuous deficit at a 25% deficit, and then group two did a 35% deficit during the week, and then they had two refeeds, putting both groups at an average of 25% deficit. Both groups were, you know, weight-trained, upper and lower body splits. Group two lost less fat-free mass, which that means basically they preserved more lean tissue and maintained a better RMR. So their metabolic rate actually, that study showed that the 48-hour refeed not only benefits your metabolism, so your resting metabolic rate, RMR, but it also, they both had the same amount of fat loss, but it's just that the group that did the refeeds had greater retention of muscle. And what I've noticed is like, you feel a little bit fuller in the gym, like you feel like you can get a pop because and a pump because you've got that 48-hour glycogen replenishment over that time frame. And then I just think mentally too, it's just psychologically, it just, you know, for some people it makes them feel better, like in a social standpoint. I know clients would rather just have this eat the same amount of calories every day, just have a higher amount. So, you know, it just is very context dependent, but what did you think of that when you did it?
Yeah. So for me personally, having the more of the deficit during the week was actually easier because I was running around. I was, I had more activities. So having to stop and eat more food was actually like annoying. It actually felt like it was taking away from like work day because it was like more that I had to consume. So it felt like I was more efficient with less calories. And then on the weekend, psychologically for me, it was nice to like be able to relax more, have more social events and a little bit more of a calorie budget. So I felt like I had more freedom. So like that cycle of being able to designate like, okay, here I'm working and here I'm able to relax in conjunction with my calorie distribution was really beneficial to me. When I give people quote unquote like refeeds on their programming, a lot of times I give them the option. Like I give them a calorie spike and I say, choose one. You can have one day of, you know, 500 calories or two consecutive days of 250 calories so that they can choose whatever works best for them. And sometimes socially, like if you have a weekend away and so you have 2 days of events, sometimes splitting up those calories is a little bit easier. Or if you have, you know, you want one big meal with your family and then you have, you know, another busy day where you don't have a social event, you just want to get right back into it, you have that like one day option as well too. So like you said, people dependent, and so it's like, you know, they both get the refeed, but they sometimes get the option depending on what works with their lifestyle.
Yeah. Okay. So that kind of covers option two. So we have option, you know, one was continuous dieting. Option two is the 24 or 48 hour refeed. And then the third one is the diet breaks. And so the very first paper that came out was in 2003. And in this paper, they had three groups. The first group was a continuous dieting group. They did that for 20 weeks. All three groups dieted for 20 weeks. Second group had a six-week break. So they had a diet break. The difference in this research was that none of the calories during the breaks were regulated. So they were actually trying to see if you took a break from the diet and just ate freely without any kind of caloric restriction if you would gain weight. And then the third group, they had 2-week diet breaks. So they would diet for 2 weeks and then they'd have 2-week breaks. And it was like an undulating cycle over the 20 weeks. So the research, even though it was supposed to be like they were trying to prove that the diet breaks would encourage weight gain, the conclusion is that they all lost the same amount of weight. So I think that inspired paper number 2 that came out in 2017, several years later in the Matador study, where they wanted to actually just simplify the same study and have it be more controlled. So they took a population of obese, untrained males. In the first group, they were continuous dieters for 16 weeks. And then the second group actually dieted for around 30 weeks because they took 2 weeks in a deficit and then 2 weeks in their maintenance calories. I really liked this research, and I know we already dove into it in another podcast, but what I liked about it is that they constantly were changing the maintenance calories, because as you mm-hmm. lose weight, your maintenance calories actually decrease. So mm-hmm. Your body, you know, if these were 300 pound males, while they're, you know, losing weight, their maintenance calories actually get lower over time. So they were actually eating less food, but they were monitoring that so that they were making sure that it was very accurate maintenance calories, which really makes a strong case for, you know, how well run this was. So not only did the group with the diet breaks lose 50% more fat, but their rest energy expenditure was preserved 2 times as well. So that's their metabolic rate. So, and then in addition to that, another great thing about that group that had the diet breaks is in the 6-month follow-up, they actually had better results than the continuous dieting group as well. And so what we can conclude from this is that, you know, the group that had the diet breaks at maintenance calories, they had more practice in that maintenance yes. calorie phase. And, I think probably their adherence was better after this diet because they took those breaks periodically and they kind of conceptualized like what it actually means to be at maintenance rather than just hard dieting for, you know, 16 weeks.
Yes, absolutely.
So then I think that's what kind of spurred this newest study that, like I mentioned in the very beginning, February of this year, Dr. Bill Campbell's lab again tried to debunk this and tried to see if what would happen in a bodybuilding population or a group that's lean, that is not obese, and that they are weight training throughout. And so for 12 weeks, both groups in this study actually lost the same amount of fat and they had the same metabolic slowdown and they also retained the same amount of muscle. So it was very inconclusive, actually. But what this tells me, it's super valuable information because, first of all, there's a couple factors. Like, I think in the Matador study, those are untrained individuals that were heavily obese, right? Mm-hmm. And then you take this lean population that is used to weight training and is weight training during that whole thing. I think, personally, that the group that was able to take periodic breaks, they just probably had better adherence. So one of the pitfalls in a nutrition study is that you can't control whether or not they're breaking their diet, right? Mm-hmm. So these people probably just did a better job of sticking to their deficit because they got those breaks, whereas mm-hmm. the others were probably cheating on their diet more frequently because they were restricted for a longer amount of time. What are your thoughts there? That's just my anecdotal opinion.
No, I think the mental aspect of it is something that's hard to measure, but it definitely plays a huge role, especially if you are a competitor and you know what it's like to do continuous dieting and reach these crazy extremes. It's mentally taxing. I mean, I've heard so many professionals within the sport talk about how it's more mental than anything. So I do think you're right on that aspect, that the adherence end of things and the ability to like stick to the goal without wavering With those breaks, it's almost like a refresher. So that's what I would gather from that information too.
Yeah, and so they did try to, in the study with Dr. Bill Campbell's lab, they did try to actually test what the psychological things impact was. And that actually was where it shows the most positive results, because the group that took the diet breaks, that was one thing that they reported in their, like, they had, I think, probably like a questionnaire of some sort, where
Yes,
they
yeah.
measured like their perceived hunger, their diet satisfaction, how much they like thought about food or thought about being hungry, or felt physically hungry. And the group that did the diet breaks felt less of those items. So from a psychological standpoint, if all things are the same, why not do the diet breaks? I mean,
Exactly.
it's not going to make you preserve more muscle. It's not going to make you lose more fat. It's not going to prevent metabolic slowdown. But mentally, it might help you. And then also, just when you do feel better mentally, when you don't, you're not so food focused, when that diet's over, I would imagine that these people, much like the Matador study, where they were able to have better results 6 months later, because their psyche was a lot less food focused and things like that.
Yeah, I was going to mention that popped into my head as well too, like the long-term effects of how you diet matters as well too. So, practicing like that maintenance calories, like you said, I can see where that's beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of sums it up with the three different diets. And I mean, what I take away from this is that I think that diet breaks are great for an improvement season, in that regard, just because I think that it's you'll have more longevity. So if you're talking like you're, you know, sticking with your coach for a year round type of activity, this might be a good thing to implement in an improvement season. And then when someone's actually dieting, you know, periodic refeeding, either 24 or 48 hours would be the best, because that actually does preserve the most muscle in a deficit and has the least amount of, or it has, it affects the metabolism the best, so to speak. So, you know, and if you have more time, then you can have more refeeds. It probably is just very dependent on what the type of person is and what they can best sustain is really what it comes down to in the end, right?
And like having the diet breaks for me was a good in between spot from, reversing out and being in a surplus and then wanting to start the dieting process again with like a show in mind. It was like a good kind of segue because I was dipping into that dieting like calories and then also getting a little bit of a surplus break. It like kind of started the wheels turning and the momentum and then like moving into the refeeds was like perfect. It was kind of like a nice like introduction into like the next phase of my competition career. So I think there's not like one avenue that maybe is best for one person all the time. There could be a variety, but like Amy said, it's about knowing your timeline, knowing the individual, looking at like where their physique is at, and a good coach will be able to use different strategies to get your specific body where it needs to go.
Yeah, there's definitely never a one size fits all, and everybody has different preferences. So it's just important to communicate and work synergistically with your coach. And, you know, with you, it was like the Matador was a really good jump start in losing like that first 5 pounds, you know, and then we came to a point where it was stalling. So we started, you know, creating the deficit with the refeeding periodically. And, you know, some people get refeeds every week. Some people get them very intermittently. It just depends again on how well you're doing, you know, and kind of how that all is working out. So,
Yes, ma'am.
all right. Well, that concludes this episode. I know we had a couple of different suggestions, that we have not talked about on the podcast. So if you all could send us some DMs on Instagram for more ideas. If we can get a couple more questions, I think we'd have enough for Q&A. And I know those are usually go over pretty well just because it's you guys telling us what you want to hear. So you can find mm-hmm. us on Instagram at Prep Life Podcast. You can also find us at Glam Girl Bikini. I know some people have DM'd me personally at Amy Anger. And then I don't know if you've ever gotten any with your, if you want to share your Instagram handle, Chris.
Oh, sure. I'm Chris Nicole underscore IFBB Pro.
Yeah. So feel free to message us and let us know what you thought of this episode. I'd be very curious to hear if any of you have had some anecdotal experiences with any of these three methods and what you thought of them. Option 1, 2, and 3. And if you would like to apply for the team, we're always looking for hardworking athletes. So you can go to glamgirlbikini.com, hit the get started button and apply. That way we will basically set up a free phone consultation to talk about your goals some more, get to know you better and see if it's a good fit. So this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, signing off with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.